you know, I think the key is through 2007, there was a demand from hedge funds to short the market and for CDO managers to, and investors, and some investors, mortgage investors, to go long individual single names or in some instances, ABFs.
Why would a CDO manager buy the index when they were being supposedly paid to select individual securities?
Look, you know, and I don't know how many CDO managers bought index, but I do recall that some, there were many CDOs that actually had securities that were part of the index. You know, one is pricing and arbitrage, and two is, you know, they did their credit work and they liked the security and they felt comfortable with the portfolio that they was set, they assembled, and felt that it was marketable to investors.
I'm sorry, I didn't fully understand that. Why would they buy an index rather than buy just the single names? I understand they've done the credit work, they like a security, they can't get enough in cash, so they go long synthetically. But why would they go long index?
Just stop for a second. I gather what you're asking me to do is pretty much speculate on the reasons that someone might do this, unless he had a direct conversation with the CDO manager.
Well, you left out the first reason that he gave, was price.
Yeah.
I mean, traded cheap.
First of all, I don't recall that there were many CDOs that had in, that were managed that had the index in them. But what I do recall is there were names that were part of the index that were included in CDOs. But, you know, I didn't speak with CDO managers frequently. I didn't assemble the transactions. I didn't structure the transactions for them. But the factor that I believe that would contribute to them wanting to use those securities is price. And that price allowed for an arbitrage that they saw in the transaction.
So who at Goldman actually did talk to the CDO managers with, in terms of the specific task of them acquiring a portfolio?
It would be primarily, it would be the CDO origination desk, whoever was on the CDO origination desk and speaking to the manager.
I understand that they would be involved in terms of structuring the CDO, marketing the CDO, all of that. I guess I don't fully understand that they would be involved in talking to the CDO manager in terms of the acquisition of the portfolio.
Or the construction of the portfolio. They would come to us for prices.
Who's the they there?
A CDO manager would come to us and say, this happened every day, you know, all the time. We would have a bid list, a BWIC, where we would, you know, bid on a number of CUSIPs, where we would buy protection, and that CDO manager would say that we were willing to sell protection on this list of CUSIPs. How those lists came about, it was up to the CDO manager and potentially whoever they were working with. And in many of those instances, those bid lists were coming from, you know, CDO managers that were working with our competitors in most instances.
We took a detour. Back to ABX. We've been talking about it for a while, and I apologize if I'm trying your patience, but I still don't sufficiently have a sense of who was long and who was short, and I'm sure that changed over time. So let's talk about sort of the second half of 06.
Okay.
In 2006, there were hedge funds that shorted the AVX, as well as, you know, traders that were managing risk. And potentially, there were real money players hedging parts of their portfolio with AVX. The longs were, you know, there were some dealers that were long. We would have been one of them. Or there were investors that were long. But, you know, I don't know specifically, you know, the distribution of those risks.
Would you say that whether long or short, that the dealer community were the dominant players in one side or the other of ABX?
I don't think you can make that conclusion. The only thing you can conclude is the flows went through the dealer community, right? So we were the dominant player because, and when I say we were the dealer community, because we were asked to make prices and make markets for our clients. Now, it was a product that was very heavily traded by the macro hedge fund community. They were both, and in addition, the hedge fund community, there were a lot of people with long-standing mortgage track records that were long ABX.
Part of it you wouldn't know, right? Because you could be trading with Merrill and you wouldn't know, for example, right?
Right.
You wouldn't know who was behind that, whether...
So, with the development of ABX, how did that change mortgage trading? I want to ask, although punt to your colleague if you want, how it changed mortgage origination.
I'll talk about, you know, the secondary securities trading businesses and how they were changed. You know, the ABX introduced a new concept, a new level of transparency for the market, something that investors could look to for daily pricing and constant price moves throughout the day and benchmark different securities that they own versus that to sort of get a sense as to where their portfolios were trading on a day-to-day basis. So I think it just added a level of transparency that didn't exist when we were in a cash-only market.
And did that transparency continue, in your view, in 2008?
Yes.
So ABX continued to trade even with the events of March and the events of September?
Yes, it just different parts of the capital structure traded more frequently than other parts of the capital structure. In 2007, it was primarily BBB and BBB minus. 2006 into the early part of 2007, it was primarily BBB and BBB minus tranches of the ABX that were very active. As those securities or those ABX tranches went down in price, in the lower dollar prices, they were viewed more as a call option on the market, and they became less frequently traded. As the problems in the mortgage market started to extend up the capital structure, the higher rated securities started to trade more, whether it was for speculative reasons, or hedging reasons, I don't know what was driving those flows, other than there was, you know, potential for those types of for those securities to actually take impairment, so they started trading more.
Do you have a view on whether the development of pay-as-you-go swaps in ABX led to more mortgage creation, meaning helped expand the mortgage bubble?
Look, I think that, I don't know, but what I can say is synthetics or mortgage derivatives helped investors, originators, dealers who were buying loans manage their risk. That allowed dealers that were securitizing loans to buy more loans and have greater certainty of their execution and be more comfortable with the risk that they held. Prior to derivatives, you either owned or you didn't own. Here you could own and hedge. So I think that that demand helped lower borrowing costs for investors, I mean for borrowers, and led to lower rates. Lower rates would bring more demand, but I want to point out that I wasn't originating mortgages, and so what, you know, I think the mortgage, you know, the issues in the mortgage market more were geared towards an origination front and poor lending practices than anything else.
So your former colleague Dan Sparks commented when asked a similar question, that more leads to more, I'm paraphrasing, that where supply ends up creating demand, so that, and maybe this is more just in terms of trading, but that when you had these new ways to participate in the market, it led to more interest in the market, which led to more activity. Do you have a similar or different view? These are opinions.
First, I'd like to know what market you're speaking about.
It's still mortgages.
I don't know what, you know, I think that there was a demand for mortgage, for assets during that time period. And there was excess cash in the system, and people wanted to invest. And people invested in mortgage-backed securities because they had been getting good returns from mortgage-backed securities. So that's what I think happened. And whether it was a demand or supply, I believe it was more of a demand created the supply here.
I'm trying to put a fairly fine point on the derivatives element and how that affected what was going on in the marketplace. And perhaps too fine a point, but I guess I get to ask the questions today. I guess the broader question is just with the development of mortgage credit derivatives, did that lead to just more interest in mortgage credit and helped expand the market? Or perhaps an alternative view is that it provided additional supply of mortgage exposure so that perhaps fewer mortgages were created in the system because you were satisfying the demand synthetically.
Look, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. You know, I can see that I believe that the derivatives were driven out of demand from to invest in assets, to create more assets. But also, I do believe that derivatives acted as, may have acted as a more of a bellwether to let people know that there were some stresses and problems in the mortgage market and may have ended the mortgage We may have started the mortgage crisis a lot sooner and prevented the bubble from extending for a greater period of time. I don't know the answer to that.
That's definitely another perspective of it actually helped burst the bubble, and if it had not, the bubble would have gone on and gotten bigger without derivatives.
I don't think derivatives burst the bubble. I think what they did was they indicated that there were maybe some stresses in the mortgage market. I think it was bad lending that burst the bubble and bad credit performance based on bad lending.
I think my use of the phrase burst of the bubble was referring only to giving a known price signal that prices are somehow less or coming down compared to what they were. So,
well, it's informational, not bursting. And I guess put that way, that's not inconsistent.
It's not.
With what
it's
say.
Kind of similar to what.
Okay. I need to look at my notes to make sure I'm covering all the things that I want to. So I want to pause this.
Okay. Everything in this building closes and turns on automatically without.
Okay.
There it is.
All right. We're starting again after a small break. I don't have tons more, but I would like to go through a few more things. You mentioned TabX, and my understanding, which could be wrong, was that that product really didn't take off. So could we talk about that a little bit?
Sure.
Am I wrong, and who is interested in longs and shorts?
You know, I didn't specifically trade TabX. But it started in February of 2007 for standardized tranches, and it really did not become a significant factor in the market. There were trades, but not a large number of them, and I don't recall, but it was nothing like the AVX or something like that.
Do you have a sense why?
There were a couple of reasons why the volumes did not increase. One was there weren't enough names in the indices. There were 20 names in the indices. So when you sliced up the indices, each representative tranche became a very isolated bet on a certain number of securities. It wasn't diversified enough, so it didn't look like a traditional CDO. Secondly, by February of 2007, there was a great deal of volatility in the AVX market, in the subprime market. Prices on the BBB-062s approached a $70 price, where they started the month somewhere in the 80s, in the high 80s, I believe. So there was a great deal of volatility upon the introduction of that product. So I think it was bad timing from a market perspective with the fundamentals that were in some of the technicals that were in the market at that time, coupled with the construction of the individual indices.
Forgive me if I repeat some things that we've gone over before. I just want to make sure.
That's fine.
Do you have a sense of the relative amounts of trading in single names versus ABX? A lot more in ABX, 4 times more, 10 times more. Do you have any?
I don't. It's something that we didn't keep, data on, or I don't recall. But there, as I said, we were at different periods of times. There were different levels of volumes, and in 2006, it was predominantly driven by macro hedge funds asking us to sell protection on ABX, CDOs asking us to buy protection on single names. But then as the basis between the ABX and the individual single names started to expand, i.e. the price of the ABX was significantly lower than comparable single name securities, then there was a growth of single name trading. And over the course of 2007, the volumes of single name trading started to pick up dramatically. And eventually, into 2008, single name trading became a much larger component of the trading volumes. But I don't know the relative sizes. I just don't recall.
So correct me if my restatement is inappropriate, inaccurate. The single name sellers of protection initially were somewhat dominantly the CDO, but then it shifted over time.
It shifted over time.
Okay. And did the buyers of who are the buyers of protection in the single name, did that also shift over time?
Yes. If following that February time period when the ABX securities, the basis between the ABX securities and the single name securities was rather large, it became increasingly popular for people looking to hedge out their positions to use the single name market because the relative pricing of single names relative to the ABX was rather attractive. And that basis over time ended up collapsing, and the price differences between the single names and the ABX converged. So we started to see some of the, you know, later stage hedge funds and money managers and trading desks that were looking to hedge out long mortgage exposure started to use the single name markets for that. And what happened was, you know, the dealer community, I can speak about myself, and I would believe that it would affect some of the other dealers. We were expected to, you know, over the course of 2006 and to the first part of 2007, to bid on single name protection to fill to ramp CDO warehouses. So we had a lot of open exposure that we needed to cover, and so it was a natural fit for a lot of players. So the volumes increased dramatically due to that.
I'm sorry, what time period were you talking
this
about?
This is, you know, during the 2007 time period.
Is this a fair statement that either Goldman or many dealers would have been less willing to have as significant CDO warehouse exposure without the ability to hedge?
Can you restate your statement? I don't understand.
You just said, if I understood it correctly, in 2007, you used single names to hedge CDO warehouse risk. Is that accurate? Okay.
No, that's not what I said. I didn't even speak about CDO warehouses. Other than we were asked to provide collateral for CDO managers that would go into their warehouses. I.e., we would buy protection facing the CDO warehouse.
Oh, okay.
They were long risk. We would end up being short those single names.
Okay.
In that instance, where we would either cover through our franchise or cover with other products like ABX.
Okay. I'm glad I It's an important point.
Thanks. Don't worry. Take your time.
It's a little hard doing the questions and taking notes at the same time.
I've actually noticed that. Actually.
I was making, we were making that comment. Yeah. It's hard enough for me to take notes and listen at the same time.
Okay. In the, I think it was the summer of, yes, in the summer, maybe even the spring of 2007, the ABS CDO market stopped.
I would say, you know, look, this wasn't, I can tell you about the flows that we were seeing in the market. In the spring of 2007, there was discussions, and you know that the deals were more difficult to sell away from us, other dealers that were doing CDOs. We noticed it in the flows of the number of single names that we were asked to bid protection on for CDO to go into new issue CDO warehouses. But I believe it was after the two Bear Stearns hedge funds that had their issues in June of 2007, that was kind of the watershed event that really kind of slowed down the creation of new CDO products. There were deals done in the spring of 2007, so I'd say that it's safe to say that it was in July of 2007 that which really signaled the deterioration and the lack of new issue CDOs.
So then that part of the market was out. Nobody was, they weren't
right.
going long.
So then prices went down of RMBS securities. The reason for that was largely due to fundamental performance reasons, as well as the there were a lot of what we'd call hung CDO warehouses on dealers' books that were largely unhedged, we believe. And there was a great deal of activity in the market where people were either selling warehouse assets or trying to hedge those positions during that time period, driving down prices. And then eventually the poor performance of the underlying of the market ended up affirming those lower dollar prices during that period.
Okay, that was helpful. Moving on a bit, I don't have a long list left. We haven't really talked much about the monolines.
Okay.
And were they, and I'm sorry if you're not the right person, were they involved on the RMBS level at either at wrapping or through CDS covering much of the AAA, well, any part of?
Yes, they were involved. They would wrap transactions. There were, they also had investment portfolios that would purchase, RMBS securities. But, what was involved in wrapping a new issue RMBS transaction. I wasn't involved with that.
So at what time did the market start discounting the monoline wrap? Like, and just say, I that's not going to help me much.
I believe it was sometime in the second, second half of 2000. It might have been earlier. I do not recall the specific time period. It was sometime during 2007 where people were more and more concerned. of the monolines and their ability to pay.
So did those securities that were wrapped become much less liquid? Did they drop a lot in price?
Well, they became less liquid because the people that bought a lot of those securities believed that the ultimate credit risk was borne by the monoline. And at that point, when people questioned the ability to pay, people needed to, everyone in the market that looked at those securities needed to pay closer attention to the underlying assets and how, what that unwrapped security would be worth. So they went down in price. They became less liquid because a number of people that expected that they took that part of the structure, or assumed that the monolines were going to pay. It involved a lot of work for people to get used to, to get comfortable with that and be able to price that risk.
Had the monolines been a significant part of the?
It depends on the mark of the sector. They were a very significant part of the second lien or the home equity line of credit market. I don't know the percentage, but they were a major credit enhancer of those securities. In the traditional subprime market, the first mortgage market, they were not as involved, but there were transactions that they were involved in, but not many.
And would their participation generally be through an insurance wrap or through CDS?
In the
second lien and home equity.
Well, they would
sector.
Provide an insurance wrap on a transaction.
Oh.
Would be how they would.
So it was the traditional way. Because CDO market seemed to morph into them doing CDS on CDOs rather than providing wraps.
Yes, I wasn't involved in working with them on those transactions, but in the RMBS market, there was is the wrap in the traditional sense that you would think.
Back to derivatives, the debates or the perspectives on the effect of derivatives. One question is, did it help increase the size of, expand the mortgages? Another is just, it created more because there was more of it, there was more exposure to mortgage credit, but for every winner, there was a loser, which is, I suppose, has to be true. But then the question becomes, because of derivatives, did the winners tend to be a certain group and the losers tend to be another group, and did that have an important impact on the financial system?
I don't know. I just don't know. I mean, it's a very complicated question. I need some time to think about that. And actually, I have to see the list of the who won and who lost. So I just don't know the answer to that. And I think, derivatives serve a very important function because it allowed people to manage their risk. And it was, derivatives have been around longer than the ABS, CDS that we're talking about today. And I think it's sure is to be an effective, very effective tool of managing risk and distributing risk in an efficient manner throughout the financial system. I don't know the answer to the second part of your question.
Do you have a suggestion to the Commission for how to try to answer that question?
I think that, as I've said before in this period, that it wasn't the existence of derivatives that caused, you know, I don't believe that it was, I think it was poor lending standards and excess capital, poor risk management decisions. I think the fact that many institutions that took outsized risks, not only in mortgages, were not marked to market. It's another factor, which, you know, marked to market accounting is like the crux of our risk management here. So I think that was another contributing factor. It was a large number of players weren't involved there or didn't have mark-to-market accounting. I think people, just didn't invest properly in a lot of the risk management techniques.
Do you think there's more or less price transparency around derivatives than around cash instruments?
There's more. If you remember that this market, the BBB RMBS security is quite small on a lot of these transactions. It might be 20, 30, 40 million of bonds. And when those securities are issued, they were generally bought by either long-only investors or were bought by CDOs who weren't necessarily sellers. So you didn't have a great deal of transparency on different on an individual security. It was difficult for people to map the prices of one security to another because everything was idiosyncratic and had a different pool by nature. When you had active derivative trading, you and I could establish a price for a credit default swap right here on an ABX security. And there were markets where the ABX tranches were on screens, and dealers readily quoted it, and investors could see where different vintages and different rated securities in the ABX were trading on a day-by-day, minute-by-minute basis. I thought that, that provides a great deal of transparency into the market that you wouldn't get in the cash markets. Because in the cash markets, there's too many bonds and it's too difficult to map.
The week Lehman failed, what happened on your desk? What were people talking about?
We were very much focused on our desk risks. What happened to the direction of the market upon failure, and that was uncertain because you didn't know what risks that needed to be replaced by the various market participants that were facing Lehman. So it was an uncertain time. There was also, you needed to factor in what was going to happen. Lehman was a major player, if not the biggest player, probably the biggest player in the mortgage market at that time. How was their failure going to affect the prices of various mortgage-backed securities, if those securities were going to be sold into the marketplace? And it was something that we had never experienced before. So there were lots of thoughts about it going on at the time.
Were there thoughts that other, leaving aside the $10 billion gorilla of AIG, were there thoughts of other market participants might fail, is it a domino effect?
It was certainly something that, you would have in the back of your mind or consider. And, if this could be a chain reaction, that was, something that I'm sure was in everybody's mind that was in the market. But it wasn't specific to us or our desk or anything like that. We were very concerned about just managing our risk and doing our job and managing the risk that we were responsible for and making sure that our positions that we owned based on a number of things that could happen. They were all unknown and unforeseen, and how our positions would behave and how they would react to the Lehman event or if something else bad happened.
Anything else you want to add about causes of the financial crisis?
No, I think I would like to call them causes. I'd say factors that may have contributed, but there was a lot of other factors that I didn't consider or mention or maybe even be qualified to answer for you.
Okay. Thank you for your time.